Good afternoon. Whatever Mike's got must be going around. My wife and I have been a bit under the weather, too. We've had barnyard sickness. I've been hoarse, and she's had a little colt. And so we've been suffering with a little bit of that, but I figure if that's the worst that ever happens, we'll be okay. I don't have the cough yet, but I'm sure it may be on the way, Mike. And Caleb's right here just in case. And I'm so glad I'm here with my brother. I have three brothers, two of which have been associated with the program today, and I'm just so thrilled that we could come together and do some things like this. I had reached out to Luke this morning and told him I'd hoped to be here, but I was having a little time with my sickness and hoping that I could get here, but wasn't going to guarantee it, and I didn't. So. I also want to really show a big piece of appreciation for the not just the thought and the effort, but the forethought that goes into a program like this. For those, and there's some of you here that I know, and there's some of you I don't. I don't know if we've got any visitors right now in this room. I hope we do. But I want to remind everyone here who has been associated with the hard work, and especially the elders and Dennis, that our obligation as Christians is not to force people to accept Christ, but to offer them the opportunity. And I think too many times we use our measuring stick when in fact God's measuring stick is completely different. When it comes to these things. I'm so glad that you've offered this opportunity to your community to listen to God's Word being presented by able men who are able to do so. I know that there was a lot of work that's gone into it and a lot of planning. You can't imagine how many hours Dennis has spent on this. I know because I talked to him. We have a relationship in which we can be bluntly honest with one another. And so sometimes we will share our frustrations, but it also makes the successes that much greater. My topic for today is going to come from the book of John in chapter 8 and verse 12. In the book of John, there are a number of times that there are revealing things about Jesus which John brings out. John, for a little bit of background, depending on whose opinion you go by, most people are now favoring a later date for the writing of John. It was likely written to a generation of people that did not see Jesus in the flesh. And folks, that's me and you. It is so applicable to us because we didn't get to see Jesus in the flesh. And so it is that as we look through the book of John, we see John bringing some things out that aren't in the previous Gospels because he wants to show you some things about Jesus that you might have seen had you actually been there when Jesus was alive. There's also a number of other things that are brought out by John because he was combating some false teachings of the time. And we could get into that. I could spend a couple of hours on that, and Mike could probably spend more than that because we've discussed this before. But whatever the case, there were a number of false teachings that were already prevalent at the time. And John makes an effort to show you some specifics about Jesus that combat those teachings. John wants to show you that Jesus was 100% real physical human and that he was 100% real spiritual God with us. And so the things that he talks about will have to do with things that Jesus can do that no man ever could and with things that Jesus touches and changes and moves with his physical body. He wants to show you all of these. He also brings out some things from Jesus himself that gives us a better clarity of who Jesus was so that we can understand him a little bit better. Now, every preacher that's worth his salt has a series of lessons called the I Ams of Christ. In the book of John, a number of times Jesus says, I am. We usually identify a specific number, but there's actually more of them than we usually include in our lessons. But there's some big ones, right? And so as we look into the book of John, we read like in John 6 and verse 48, I am the bread of life. We read things like in John 9 and verse 12, I am the light of the world. In John 10 and verse 9, I am the door. John 10 and verse 11, I am the good shepherd. We can go on. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. Jesus gives all these pieces that are about Him. And when He says these things, the people that He's talking to don't always completely get it. In fact, I would argue that there's a lot of things that even the apostles really didn't understand about Jesus until after His death, His burial, His resurrection, and maybe even after Pentecost. There were a number of things that they didn't really understand until those pieces came into place. Just like the Jewish people of the Old Testament, each time that they came together for one of these celebratory feasts that they were supposed to do throughout the year, it was supposed to be with an eager anticipation that there was someone coming that was going to fulfill the acts of this particular feast. Now, by the time Jesus came along, well, some of them weren't even following the feasts anymore, and the ones that were had forgotten the purpose of those feasts. And they failed to see Jesus for who He was in these fulfillments. But as we look through these pieces where Jesus says, I am, there's something with each one that Jesus is trying to convey that doesn't come across any other way. And we could spend a lot of time this afternoon talking about each and every one of these. But today, I chose to bring forth this lesson on Jesus being the light of the world. I want to focus on this specific claim, and I want you to think about what it would be like if you currently lived in darkness. Now, one of my favorite authors is a guy named Mark Goodwin. Mark writes these books about the end of the world as we know it, all right? And he's a Christian author, so he's something that even your kids can read, and you're not going to be upset about what they read. But in each one of these, something happens that shakes life as we know it. And in most of them, at some point in there, the lights go out. Now, it's weird to me. I talked to a guy the other day. We were talking about what do you do if you've got a prolonged length of time that your power's out. And he said, I'm from Wisconsin. I'm from a big city. And I've never worried about it before. The most I've ever gone without electricity was 2 hours. And some of us, by the time it gets to 2 days, we don't know what to do. We are so dependent on light for the things that go on even after the natural light is expended for the day. And so it is when Jesus says, I am the light of the world, there's a lot of things connected to it. There's a lot of pieces. And we're not going to go into each piece of it, but I want you to understand how important it is that we understand the light that is Jesus Christ. The first thing I want to mention is this, where it happened. Jesus makes this statement when He is with a number of people, and specifically, especially if you read a couple of your commentaries and see a little bit about where He is standing in the temple at the time, He is standing right by 2 huge light sources, all right? Now, their light sources had an open flames, not like ours today. But these things were lighting everything around them. And Jesus looks at those and He looks at the folks and He says, not those, I am the light of the world. What does it mean that Jesus is the light of the world? I want to start by talking about darkness for just a second. Because the light isn't so important if there's not darkness. Sometimes we forget what darkness is, right? We talk about the time after the sun has set of being dark. I was out near Columbia, not Tennessee, Kentucky, doing some hunting a few years ago, and it just so happened we were out there in the middle of nowhere, this little cabin, no electricity on or anything like that, and it was a full moon. And I woke up in the middle of the night, and it was as clear as ever. You see everything out there, including the coyote on the other side of the property, all right? It was so bright, it was unreal. Some people would call that dark. It's not dark. Darkness is that dark you get when you visit like one of these caves that you go in. I mean, well, there's a number of them around here. Maybe you've been to Mammoth Cave. Maybe you've been to Kentucky Down Under. When I was a kid, we went out and saw the great Ruby Falls. Remember Ruby Falls? You were a little kid. And so it was. You go down into those places, and a lot of times they'll turn the lights out, and you literally can't see your hand in front of your face. That's dark. Darkness makes it so that we can't completely understand the things that are around us. Even a little bit of light doesn't cast often enough to really understand what's around us. One of my favorite people in the world is a preacher down in Ripley, Mississippi. His name's Jerry Owen. And Jerry went to do some work in Memphis when he was a younger man, and he was staying with a friend of his on the couch. And he said, I wasn't real familiar with the guy's house, but he said, I came in at night and I put my stuff together and I went to sleep. And in the middle of the night, he wakes up and he needs to do what a lot of us need to do when we wake up in the middle of the night. We drank too much water. We need to go to the restroom. And so Jerry said, I walked over to the hallway to go to the restroom. And he said, there was an invisible barrier that kept me from getting to the restroom. He said, I could see the hallway. I could see the door of the restroom. I knew exactly where it was and how I was to get there, but I could not get to the restroom. And he said, out of frustration, finally I laid down right there and went back to sleep. And the next morning, I woke to find myself in front of a full-length mirror on the opposite wall. A little more light would have shown it. He could see just enough to be frustrated. Sometimes a glimmer isn't enough. Jesus said, I am the true light of the world. Now, darkness is symbolized a number of times in the Bible, and we could go through all kinds of places. I want to mention a couple. Isaiah chapter 9 is one. In Isaiah 9, in verses 1 and 2, we read, there will be no gloom for her who is in anguish. In the former time, she had brought into concept the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, but in the later time, he has made glorious ways into the sea, the land beyond the Jordan in Galilee of the nations. The people who walked in darkness have now seen a great light, and those who dwell in a land of deep darkness, on them the light has shone. It's one of my favorite predictions of Jesus coming to the earth, because he truly would be a light that shone in the darkness. You see, in the dark, it's hard to figure out. In the dark, it's hard to get around. I don't know if you've ever tried maybe blindfolding yourself. Maybe you played a game or something like that when you were a kid. When I used to do theater, they would do stuff with us because you had to know where stuff was on the stage in the dark. They would blindfold us and we had to go over and pick up something on the stage. And it's tough. And you can't ever completely understand what's around you until there is some light. It was the same way in the Old Testament. It was the same way even in the Old Law. The law wasn't meant to bring a complete understanding because it had yet to be fulfilled. It had yet to be finished. And the people were still in darkness. Job 5 and verse 12, he frustrates the devices of the crafty so that their hands cannot carry out their plans. Verse 14, and they meet with darkness in the daytime and grope at noonday as though it is night. We understand what it is to be caught up in the dark and not be able to find what we need. In John 3 and verse 19, we read, this is the judgment. The light has come into the world, and people loved the darkness rather than the light because their works were evil. One of my closest friends, the guy that when he was younger, he lived a completely different lifestyle, and he played lead guitar with a rock band. Now, looks like an interesting life, but he'll tell you in a heartbeat, you're around the dregs of society pretty much all the time. And he said, it's interesting what happens, too. He said, because you start to separate yourself from those things because you don't want to be like those people that you play music to. And he said, the weirdest thing will happen, though. He said, whatever the time that the little bar or whatever you're at closes and the lights come on, he said, that one or two or three girls that have been winking at you all night and you start thinking, man, she's pretty cute, all of a sudden the lights come on and you want to run. Light is revealing. It shows things for what it really is. And it's the same way with a lot of places. You go into a restaurant and they got all the mood lighting and stuff like that. I wonder what it looks like in the daytime. My mother is a teacher. She teaches family and consumer science. And for those of us that are a little older, that's called home ec. All right? I had to get all fancy with it. And she talked about years ago, I think it was back in the 80s, there was a lady that came out with a whole book on how to make your house look nice if somebody was coming over at the last minute and you hadn't had time to clean. And you know what number one was? Dim all the lights. It'll look a whole lot cleaner if you dim the lights. Make sure the ceiling fan stays on so they don't see the dirt on the ceiling fan. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff there too. But dimming the lights, it's a lot harder to tell what's really there because of the darkness. What's the reality of the darkness, though? Ephesians 5 and verse 11 says this, take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. Light exposes things. It shows it for what it really, really is. The reality of the darkness is seen all around us today. All you have to do is turn on the TV for just a minute, and you see things like stabbings and shootings and terrorism, sometimes even bombings. We see oppression, we see sexual abuse, we see greed. Viewed in the media, well, you don't have to turn very many channels to find some kind of filth on TV today. How does it come into our lives, though? Well, then we start looking around us and we see the plagues that come with the darkness, the adultery, the physical and verbal abuse, false religions all around us claiming to be the light when in fact it's just another path in the darkness. In Ephesians 4 and verses 17 through 19, Paul makes several observations about people that walk in this darkness. He says that they are in the futility of their sins. He says they are darkened in their understanding. He says they are alienated from the life of God and ignorant because of the blindness of their heart. He says that they have gotten past feeling and given over to lewdness and work all kinds of uncleanness and greediness in their lives. And brethren, we don't have to look too far because these things even come into the places we think are the most sacred, whether it be our homes, our schools, our churches, especially our governments. And so it is that these people again choose to walk in darkness. But I got good news. Jesus is the light of the world. And in that light, there are many things revealed, but there are many truths shown. There are some people that are afraid of the light. Those people that are there at 4 o'clock in the morning when the bar closes, they don't want that light to come on and show what they really look like. They don't want you to see what was hidden by the darkness. But the same light that reveals all of those terrible things also reveals the truth and the way out of those things. Jesus is truly the light of the world. By the way, the passage that we're looking at today, that's not the only place that he makes this claim. He makes this claim all through the Gospels. We see a number of times where he gives this comparison of light and dark, but it's not surprising that John points it out a little further than everybody else. In fact, John uses this play of light and darkness all through his gospel. Even over when you read about Judas getting ready to leave the Last Supper and go over to do his dark works, there's even a specific little phrase there that talks about how he passes out of the light and into the darkness. He wants you to see the difference in what is true light and what is true dark. Jesus is the light of the world. Let's break that down for just a moment. The first thing I want you to see is that He is the light. Not a light. Not one of many lights. Jesus isn't one way among a whole bunch of different ways that you can all get to the same place. Jesus is the only light. I was listening to the radio the other day, and there was a guy on there talking about religions of the world. And he said, you know, I look at it like this. It's a big wagon wheel. And we're all trying to get to the middle. And we got all these different spokes that all go the same way to the middle of this wagon wheel. Brethren, that's darkness. That is untruth. That is a lie that Satan wants us to believe. Because Jesus is the light. In John chapter 1, John 1 starts out talking about what was in the beginning. By the way, that was one of the false teachings that he was combating, was that Jesus was a created being, not one that was preemptive of creation. And so it is there, he starts out talking about in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, the Word was God, the same was in the beginning of God. All things, he said, were created through Him, and apart from Him, nothing was made that was created. And then we go on down to around verse 4. And it says in verse 4, in Him was life, and the life was the light of men. Verse 5 says, the light shined in the darkness. The darkness couldn't overcome it. Verse 6, there was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to bear witness about the light. Verse 8, but he was not the light. Verse 9, the true light which gives light to everyone was coming into the world. Jesus on other occasions talked about Himself as the light. John 9 and verse 5, as long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. John 12 and verse 35, the light is among you for just a little while longer. John 12 and verse 46, I've come into the world as light so that whoever believes in me may not remain in darkness. I was stumbling around a house one day looking for something very specific in the dark. And you know how it is when you're not that far from something that would be convenient, but it's like, no, I can do without it. I'll get by without it. I can find what it is I'm looking for. I had a great flashlight in the car, and it was dark, but I didn't want to go over to it because I thought that I would be okay on my own without it. As it turns out, I could have probably made that trip back and forth to the car 8 or 10 times by the time that I finally found what I was looking for. But too many choose to remain in the darkness even though the light is right there. And we see that the light is the life. John 8 and verse 12, Jesus said, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. And when Jesus talks about life, He talks about the abundant life. Now, Mike talked a little bit about how we think differently sometimes in an earthly way than God thinks of when it comes to the abundant life, because we start thinking about all the stuff that we can have and we think that's going to make us happy. When in fact, the abundant life is something much greater. If you look over in Philippians 4, and he even mentioned Philippians 4, we see a number of things right in that particular passage, and it comes all the way down to even changing in 4 and verse 8 how we think, how we're supposed to think of things in this life. But leading up to that, he tells us that he wants us to have some things, especially be a partaker of something that is divine, that is very special, and that by doing that and having that and understanding that, we can have not just peace, but we can also have abundance in our life when it comes to joy. In fact, in one of those verses, right in the very beginning of Philippians 4, he talks about joy that overflows. That's a pretty special joy. I don't mean just a little bit of joy. I don't mean a measure of joy. In fact, down in Philippians 4:8, he tells us some things to add, right? He gets all in. You got to get into Paul's mindset because he's a mathematician. And he says, you got to start with faith, but here's some things to add. But in the very beginning of that passage, he says that he wants some things to be multiplied unto you, and they are grace and joy. And that's how we get there, is understanding what we see in the light that shines through the darkness. The next piece is this. He is the light of the world. That's pretty special. Not just the Jews, not just the Pharisees, not just some elite group that was pre-chosen or happened to be born at the right time or of the right blood or in the right name, but of the whole world. The light that shines in the darkness is for us all. It was foretold by the prophets. Isaiah 49 and verse 6, we read, it is too light a thing that you should be my servant to rise up the tribes of Jacob and to bring back the preserved of Israel. I will make you as a light for the nations, that my salvation may reach to the very end of the earth. Thank God we have such a Savior whose arm is not so short that it can only save some, but can save every one of us, Jew or Greek, no matter where we're from, no matter what color we are, no matter what our past has been, what sins we have dragged to the cross with us. Thank God that He was sacrificed for every one of those sins, and through Him we have the light of life. In Acts 26, and beginning in verse 15, we see an interesting command that's given to someone who was about to become an apostle. Paul, talking about this, says, I said, who are you, Lord? And the Lord said, I am Jesus whom you are persecuting. But rise, stand upon your feet. For I have appeared to you for this very purpose, to appoint you as a servant and a witness to the things in which you have seen me and those in which I will appear to you, delivering you from the people and from the Gentiles to whom I am sending you, to open their eyes so that they may turn from darkness to light and from the power of Satan to that of God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins and a place among those who are sanctified by faith in me. And it's available to all who believe. But we have to be willing to see the light. Many years ago, there was a story told about a guy that was going down the road, and he was a devout atheist. I mean, it was just as atheist could be. And he was driving down this little country road on the way to an appointment he had, and he saw a kid that was out and had a little box of puppies. And there was a little sign on the box that said, Atheist Puppies for Sale. Well, he's just tickled to death. He didn't know what an atheist puppy was, but he wanted one. And so it was, he stopped by and he said, Son, I'm really interested. I've never had an atheist puppy, but boy, do I want one. He said, I've got to be somewhere for a couple of 3 days, but when I come back here, if you have any left, I want one of these atheist puppies. And sure enough, about 3 days later, he's coming back through, and the same little kid in the same little box and the same little puppies, and he had a sign out that said, Christian Puppies. And he said, Son, I don't understand. And the boy looked at him and said, They got their eyes open now. Sometimes we need an opening of our eyes. Jesus is the light of the world. But the passage doesn't stop there. The next piece of the passage says, for those who follow Him. It's one thing to have a flashlight. It's another thing to go back to your car and get it and actually use it. It's one thing to have someone who is leading you in a path of light, and another thing to turn away into darkness anyway. For those who follow Him, how do we follow Him? Well, it's easy. It's by becoming His disciple. Note the connection between following Jesus and being a disciple. The word disciple simply means a follower or a learner of the one you're following. And only those who follow him are going to have this light of life, according to our passage here in John 8. And so it is, if I want to walk in the light, I have to connect myself with the light giver in some way. Dennis has mentioned that I've known him for quite a few years, and I think we actually first met at camp. But since then, we've been co-workers and co-laborers, and we've substituted for each other in preaching and all kinds of things. But from maybe all the years, at least most of them, that I have known Dennis, there's a little phrase that he has connected himself with, and he's used it to sign his emails. He's used it to send out some daily Bible studies at times. And he's used it in all different kinds of ways, but every time I see that little phrase, it just makes me love it and love him all over again. It says, reflecting the sun. You see, when we become disciples, when we become followers of Jesus Christ, then the truth comes in that Jesus speaks about in Matthew 5 when he says, you are the light. It's not because there's light in me. It's because I'm reflecting a light that comes from the one I follow. It's only when I'm walking in that light with him that I too become the light. We get there by deciding to follow him. John 12 and verse 46 says, I've come into the world as the light so that whoever believes in me may not remain in darkness. We have to become his disciple and then we have to abide in that light. We have to live in it. And we only do that by abiding in his word. We are only truly his disciples, John 8 and verse 31 says, when we're willing to abide by the things that he has commanded. In 2 John and verse 9, we read, everyone who goes on ahead and does not abide in the teaching of Christ does not have God. Whoever abides in the teaching has both the Father and the Son. As we abide in His words, we not only walk in the light, we become that light and we reflect that light to those who are around us. Philippians 2, verses 15 and 16 says that you may be blameless and innocent children of God without blemish, in the midst of a crooked and a twisted generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast to the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I may be proud that I did not run in vain or labor worthlessly. And by doing that, we prove what is acceptable and we expose that which is not, Ephesians 5. One of my favorite passages in the entire Bible comes from the book of 1 John in chapter 1. And the reason that it's one of my favorite passages is because it reminds me that as I continue walking in the light, that even when I stumble, there is something that forgives me and keeps me going. We read there, if we walk in the light as he is in the light, there continues to be a cleansing fountain, a water that cleanses us, like from the inside, not like taking a bath, but from the inside. And it keeps breathing a new life in me, even though I mess it up sometimes. In Matthew 5, not only does he say you are the light of the world, he says that if you're truly a light, you can't be hidden. It's like the city that sits up on a hill. And so it is that we're reminded that there are others who look at us. And sometimes the only light they may see is the reflection of the sun in us. I want to ask you some questions, and then I'm going to let you go. Are you sometimes confused? You have a right to be confused at times because Satan bombards us with lies all around us. He shows us fake roads. He gives us fake prophecies. Provides for us fake saviors. Gives us false hope, false trusts. Entices us with all kinds of things that he makes look beautiful, but in the view of the full morning light, is actually quite disgusting. But we don't have to stay in that darkness. We don't have to keep living in that. We have an opportunity to have our eyes opened. And it only comes through the Word of God. And so it is that if you're confused, if you're making a mess of yourself, if you've messed up your life, your family, your home, whatever it is, you don't have to live in that darkness. We have an opportunity to come to the light that is in Christ. And when you become a Christian, a disciple, a follower, there remains a cleansing for you that keeps forgiving you over and over as long as you're walking in the light. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that a great hope for me and you? Because I don't know about you, I haven't made it there yet. I'm certainly not perfect. And so it is that we have this continued opportunity, this continuing granting of forgiveness to us. But we have to be willing to obey. We have to be willing to follow. The way out of confusion is Jesus, the light of the world. Don't stumble in darkness any longer. Following Him is really simple. It begins by really believing Him, right? That's true faith. And without that faith, we can't be pleasing to God. And then it comes to us through repentance, changing the way we want to live, and it requires changing our mind about it, and being willing to obey Him, first in baptism, putting away of the sins in us by being forgiven in Him in an act of humble obedience. And then we stay in that by continuing to put His Word in our hearts that becomes the lamp unto our feet. And if we continue in that light, well, John's already told us, hadn't he? As long as we walk in that light, there continues to be a forgiveness for us. I hope that that's where you are today. And like Mike said earlier, there might be somebody here who might be a little nervous about coming up during our invitation song. It is a song that's to encourage you. But if it is that you want to talk to somebody today, maybe you've got some struggles in your life, maybe you just need somebody's hand to hold and a prayer to be said with you, maybe just to be reminded that there are people around us, even in a dark world, that care, whatever it is that your heart desires, I hope that you'll make it known by coming as we stand and sing.